All right. Yeah, well, we are starting in 1 Timothy 5, and so we've been talking about spiritual disciplines, and it says, if to say, as you are committing yourself to, yes, grow in godliness and pursue Christ-likeness, you cannot do that by yourself. And so I think that's why there is a rather strong shift towards talking about the family of God, the full family of God, and how we relate to one another. So with that, let's go ahead and dive into 1 Timothy 5. I'm not going to stop as quickly as I am right now, but could I have somebody just read verse 1 and 2, and then we're going to talk about this.
Do not rebuke an older man, but exhort him as a father. Am I reading the right one?
Yeah.
I got that going on over here.
Older women as mothers, younger women as sisters, with all purity.
Yeah, and we skipped younger men as brothers, but I think you get the picture here. It's family, right? As you would try and correct your father, that's the way you're meant to exhort an older man. This is very, very interesting here. Once again, this is directed to the pastor, but what kind of ways should we take this and consider even the way we relate to one another? I understand I'm the only pastor in the room, but there's still something here. Look at the end of verse 2 here. So we got fathers, mothers, brothers and sisters, and then this last word here, I think, is meant to be about all of it. Somebody read what they have.
My Bible says purity.
Yeah. Yeah, with all purity. I really don't think this is specifically for the younger woman. I think it's for all of these addresses, the way in which we talk with one another. This is not about sexual purity, but rather about directional purity. There's no secondary motivations. There's no, yes, here's what I'm saying, but here behind what I'm saying. Like if you might hear a presidential speech like has been given recently, there are things that were said, and then there are the things that you were meant to understand, right? I think Paul is trying to be very careful with Timothy to say what you mean. Be straightforward. But when you say these things, mean what you say. Mean what you say. That's the hard part about it. Preachers get a lot of flack for being too much like politicians because we want to please everybody and not upset anyone. But we should still say something worth saying.
I think it just means respectful.
Yeah, absolutely. Treat each other as adults, in one sense. Yeah. When you talk about purity, that really is the intention here, is to say we're going to talk to each other exactly as we mean to say it. And even as we speak to one another in this familial language of father, mother, sister, brother, there's something that's paired with the sincerity of what we say, with the respectfulness of in which we say it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So sincerity, but also honor. I think that's a helpful way of thinking about this. And once again, we're talking immediately after the context of spiritual disciplines, right? Pursuing godliness and training ourselves in this. The way that we do this, the way that we encourage one another, is not in saying, well, knock it off over there. Don't rebuke these older men, but exhort them. Hey, have you tried this? Or what have you found beneficial in this practice? It's a completely different approach than the world and how they might go about pursuing spiritual matters. I'm sorry. I'm looking for a response here, but I don't know if there is one.
Well, there was a lot of temple prostitution back in those days.
Yeah.
So I think it does have to do with that, too, but I think you're right also.
Yeah, no, yeah. To say the least, we'll get to that part actually in just a second. We could say that it comes along with it, right? How do I say this carefully and in light of the context of the passage here? As a pastor, sometimes you have conversations about very delicate matters, and some people perceive that as, you care about me in this kind of affection, when no. I'm trying to care for you with the love of Jesus, and hear that and only that. If you hear something else, that was on you, or if it came out in some way, that was not my intention. I remember just being somebody who worked at Starbucks with a lot of young people, and sometimes the whole thing of me just caring about people came across as like, oh, you care about me, huh? It's like, nope, not like that. But there's something to be said with that. That comes right alongside the word purity. Once again, not in terms of sexuality, but in terms of intention. I mean what I say, and I say what I mean. And that's it. There's no second. There's no background noise that I'm trying to get across. Promise. All right, we'll move on here because it is such a delicate matter. But we will come back to it. Because then it talks about another aspect of family, and there's a little bit to say here, so we'll read this whole section here. Can somebody read verse 3 and 4, and then 5 and 6, and 7 and 8? And then we'll keep talking about widows, but we need to start with where it starts.
Okay, honor widows who are really widows. But if any widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn to show piety at home and to repay their parents. This is good and acceptable before God.
And now she that is a widow indeed and desolate trusteth in God and continueth in supplications and prayers night and day. But she that liveth in pleasure is dead while she liveth.
Command these things yet again as well, so that they may be without reproach. But if anyone who does not provide for his relative, and especially for members of his household, he has denied the faith, and worse, is an unbeliever.
Yeah, we need to touch on that last piece in context. But before we do, let's talk about widows for a second. I think we can easily say Paul is not saying that if you have grandkids and children who are still living, that doesn't, you lose your spouse and you're not a widow. I'm pretty sure Paul understands those people are still widows. But what is Paul getting at here when he talks about those who are really widows? Is that what the translation, your translation? Mm-hmm. Mine says widows who are genuinely in need, which is an interesting way to say it. I don't know which one's more literal. I don't have the Greek offhand.
People that don't have any kids or family to look out for them.
Yeah. And so think about this in context of the church. Or even the beginning problems of the church in the book of Acts. Like, do we remember why deacons came about in the first place? Anybody remind me?
Yeah, because preachers were too busy being preachers really to deal with the widows. And so they needed, other people to take care of the widows and the children, and stuff like that.
Yeah. Deacon Jim, did you have a comment here?
No, that's okay.
Yeah, and it specifically had to do with some of the Greek widows being overlooked in favor of the Jewish widows. And so, all right, we need people who are full-time focused on these people to discern who is the greatest in need, where is the greatest inequality, you could say, and how do we address those and start with where there's the greatest lack and meet them there. It's Acts chapter 6, if you want it. But
a lot of churches that are, pretty good size assign deacons mm-hmm. to certain families, for over to look look after their needs, not necessarily the widows, but just families in general.
Yeah.
That's how Gaspar did it.
What?
That's how Gaspar did it.
Yeah, that's... I don't know for sure if Paul's... It seems like Paul's church does that, but Landmark did that, I know, when I was there.
Yeah, well, I guess my only comment was to say that that was kind of the original source and need for deacons, was because this was such a widespread issue. And I'll say it was a greater issue in, 2,000 years ago than it is today, if for no other reason than people just seem to live a lot longer. But it is interesting here to say that there's a difference between those who are in need and those who aren't as much in need. So it really is just trying to measure where is the greatest inequality. But verse 4 here, it's very interesting that the priority is still on practicing godliness. But what I want to try and understand is, in what context are they saying, let them learn to practice godliness? Halfway through verse 4 here, let them learn to practice godliness toward their own family first and to repay their parents, for this pleases God. So who's practicing godliness here? Is it the widow?
No, it's the relatives.
Yeah, it's on the children, it's on the grandchildren. A part of pursuing godliness, maybe you could say a spiritual discipline even, is to start with your own family, care for your own family. And to say the least, widows have done that, and now it's as if God, in a much better version of the circle of life than what Lion King presents, is saying at this stage in life, it is a good thing for your children to grow in godliness by serving you. I love that as just an approach to understanding our own families, to say, hey, at this point in your life, you are meant to serve. And another point of your life, you're saying, you're meant to be served. That is an okay way to look at it. As somebody who worked in children's ministry, I would sometimes have folks say, I've been serving for 40 years and I just don't know if I can do it. And they'd come up and apologize about saying, I need to step down. And they tell me they're worried about maybe dropping a child or not being strong enough physically to direct a class of children. I'm like, yeah, that's okay. You should feel zero guilt about that. There is a time in your life and your pursuit of godliness that it looks different than it did when you were in your 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. It's all going to look different.
Well, and we're to respect our father and our mother.
Yeah.
The difficulty comes in nowadays, I think, in how long people are living.
Sure.
And so a lot of kids think, well, I respect my father and my mother, but they don't want me buttoned into what's going on all the time.
Yeah.
It's just part of being a responsible person.
Yeah.
And making sure that if there is a need of some kind somewhere, that it's taken care of. And that you were talking about deacon, that may be a situation where someone comes to you and says, I need help doing this or I need help doing that, then as a deacon it's my responsibility. See if there isn't someone in the church that can help if I can.
Right. Yeah, I got a call just yesterday about someone who had a fridge go out, not a member of our church. And I was able to connect with Al Pierce over at First Baptist Church. He's not the lead pastor, but he's also directly connected with churches and mission. And so, all right, fine. You're going to be a quicker solution than what I can come up with offhand, you know? I think that's great. All right, well, let's press on here. Verse 5 does talk about the way that there is a pursuit of godliness for the widow. And I want to say this, what is the focus of pursuing godliness here? If you are someone who cannot physically serve, there is a priority here in verse 5.
Rephrase.
Yeah, so what are you spending your time with? If you find yourself as a widow, and you are desperately in need of support, what is one way that you can be spiritually growing? Yeah, and they're one and the same. That's the best part. Not only are you putting hope for yourself in God, you're putting your hope for others in God. And it's all about securing and strengthening this same faith. And you're going to deepen in your faith as you pray for yourself and as you pray for others. It's amazing. Very, very thankful that we have a reputation, I would say a growing reputation, of being a praying church. That is a wonderful thing for people to say to me as a pastor. It's like, really? Is that okay? Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. We're a praying church. That's an encouragement to me.
You don't believe it. Really? No, what he's saying is that he can't believe that somebody would think we're not.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Uh-huh. No, I mentioned this to, this is one of my favorite jokes because it says something too that I shared with Jim and Tim. In our last leadership meeting, about the elderly fish who is swimming along and sees the two younger fish swimming, and he says, "How's the water, boys?" And the two younger fish look at each other and say, "What's water?" Sometimes you don't know what you're swimming in, especially if you're young along in it. I'm still young. I don't know what water is. What is this church? Where are we at? I don't know. I need an outsider's perspective. I'm still a young fish. I'll get there.
I'll think that
you're. Yeah. Anyway. All right. It's very interesting also. We get a command, verse 7. Did everyone have that word command at the very beginning of verse 7? Command? Instruct, maybe? What do we have?
Charge.
Okay. It is meant to be this rather strong language, though. This is something that must be done. Charge kind of has the inclination of challenge, right? But that they will be above reproach. When's the other time that we've heard this phrase, living above reproach?
Pastors.
Yeah. The qualifications for pastors. Yeah, we could say this is a really great thing of the whole congregation. But you have pastors as a requirement, widows as a direct challenge on their lives. Very, very interesting. And then we could say there's an implied instruction that this should be the case for all Christians. But, I mean, I don't know, if someone regularly has something bad said about them, it doesn't mean they're a bad Christian, you know. It just means they probably shouldn't be the pastor. Anyway, I just find that very, very interesting, just because it's such an uncommon phrase in the Bible, period. And then comes this very interesting verse, and I don't think it's related to the reproach at all. It's almost as if Paul is taking a moment here to talk directly to the children and to the grandchildren. So sometimes this is talked about to fathers and husbands who don't have a big enough paycheck. I don't think that's what this is about. I want us to see this in context. But if anyone does not provide for his own family, especially for his own household, I think that word is dangerous. Does anyone else have a different word? Household?
Family.
Family, okay. Miss Ann, I'm in the middle of verse 8 here.
Yeah, just house.
House, okay. But the consequence is really dire. He has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Okay. When we're talking about household and we're talking about family, it is very easy to make this about your own children or your spouse and saying they have want or a desire for something and you can't give it to them. Clearly, you cannot provide for your own family. You are not in the faith. I don't know how many times that implication has been made on me, which that's a hard pill to swallow. I can't buy my kids a lot of toys they would like to have. Or my wife a lot of toys, for that matter. That's true.
Well, needs and wants are not the same thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
If you provide for their needs, I think that suffices. I mean, people ask for too many things that, you know, that they don't need. I mean,
yeah. Can you think of any common ones that we see as needs and are actually wants? We can think about our culture.
Well, I can. In my own situation, because when I see a piece of fabric that I really want, I think I need it, but I don't need it. I just really want it.
Yeah.
You know, and then I end up with a whole room full of stuff that, yeah, when I bought it or when I looked at it, I thought, oh, well, I'm going to make this, yeah, but I've never made it. So, see, I didn't need it, you know. I mean, I just wanted it.
You need food, you need clothes,
right,
not a whole closet full,
right,
or a store full, but, you know,
and I
need a few.
I'm trying really hard, you know, when things, like canned goods, for example. Herb used to get so mad at me because we really didn't move that many times, you know, in our lifetime. But, I mean, the times that we moved, we had boxes of canned stuff that we moved, you know. And, I mean, that wasn't really necessary, but I was always afraid of not having,
yeah,
something. So whenever things are on sale, instead of, you know, buying like one, I'd buy whatever the limit was, you know. And I'm trying to break myself of that. I mean, I'm doing a lot better. The kids are beginning to be a little more proud of me. I actually went to Kroger's the other day and they had their Valentine bears marked down. I think they were like $12 or $15, you know, at Valentine's time. And they were only $4 and I didn't buy one. And usually when I see something like that, you know, I buy them to give for gifts, you know, at other times. But the last time Kathy came over and helped me organize my extra bedroom, we had a little discussion. And so I'm trying. She was so proud of me that I didn't buy it.
Jim, you were going to say something?
I had an uncle. He's gone now. You know, we'd go somewhere and he'd see something that said it was 50% off or 25% off or something like that. And he'd go, I don't really need this, but I can't not save that much money. I've got to save that much money. So
yeah,
I'm gonna buy it.
Well, see, that's the way with me, you know.
I think that's a symptom of today's society. As far as wants and needs are concerned, we just think, oh my gosh, that's so cheap. I gotta get it. Or
yeah, but it was stuff you would never even use.
It was things like record players, or you know, he had a dozen of them at home, but we'd buy another one because it was 50% off.
Yeah. So the needs and wants conversation is where this usually has to start. But I want to come back around to this whole paragraph. And the next one is still talking about widows. And so when it says the word house or household and family, I just want to make sure that we place this verse in its surrounding context. So this discussion of needs is really, really good. But I want to make sure we apply it to directly to caring for widows. So this is, once again, another direct comment here. You might even say toward the families when it comes to verse 7, command this also so that they will be above reproach. I think there's part of that that's in light of this. But verse 8 is talking to children and grandchildren to say, if you don't care for your mom or your grandma after they've lost their spouse, you know, your grandpa, your dad, I think what you're doing is denying the faith, because we call each other brothers and sisters so that the family has grown. But for us to reject our own families, that's completely to flip it on its head and to flip upside down what Jesus came and said. Jesus said, fathers and mothers are going to reject you because of your faith. So for you to reject your father or mother in their deepest time of need is to join them in as an unbeliever. I think that's Paul's line of thinking here. So it really is not about households. Yeah.
Because non-believers are taking care of their families.
Yeah. Yeah, I always love Jesus' comment about, you know, dads are trying their best. And if you ask them for something, they're not going to give you like a rock or a snake. Just picture your heavenly Father and the good gifts He is giving you. He's not just trying His best. He knows what you need. Anyway, all that to say, the command that Paul is giving here and the warning that's now being ending and maybe even as the middle point of this whole set of paragraphs about widows has to do with children and their grandchildren. So this is not addressed to moms and dads taking care of their kids. And this is really not about being on the unemployment line, though that's a separate conversation. This verse, as we're supposed to use it, as it's intended, is about caring for your family members who are in physical need. Yeah.
See, people struggle with this part right here because so many kids, especially nowadays, the wife works, the husband works. Mm-hmm. Mm. And then their parents get elderly and maybe they get sick or, you know, disabled and whatever. And they can't really care for them in one perspective.
Yeah.
And so then they feel guilty, you know, because they can't, because they're Christian, you know. But there is a time, honestly, I think, and I've seen this with a lot of my friends lately, where they get to the point where a family member can't take care of them. Like, for example, Laureen Clark right now, and I know, Jim, you and Connie, yeah, they used to come to our church, and Don, he is in such a bad shape that Maureen just really physically, and she's always kept him at home. Mm-hmm. Well, right now, she's had to put him, you know, in a facility, my favorite place, Meadow Lakes, and I said, oh my goodness, but that's for their insurance, you know, but he's at the point where physically she cannot care for him, and it's just breaking her heart. She just cries all the time over it. Yeah. You know, because she doesn't want to put him there. So, but, so it's really, there's a fine line there.
Yeah.
You know, And then, on the flip side of that, there's people that deliberately put their parents places like that, that don't want to care for them, even though they can. And, I mean, and they never go to see them, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's really, it's a difficult.
Well, there are those who put them in places, and Lorraine's not one of these.
No.
But there are people who put people in a place, like a nursing home or someplace, where they, and they say, well, they're being taken care of.
But they're not.
Mm-hmm. And so it's a situation where, you know, they may want to take care of them, and they can take care of them, but those that put them in places like that say, oh, they're being taken care of.
I know that's what I'm saying. There's two different sides to it, you know.
Well, and this is often how it works, unfortunately, is those who feel guilt are the ones who shouldn't, and the ones who don't feel any guilt are the ones who should.
Exactly. I've been in those places, unfortunately, or maybe unfortunately, because then I realized, you know, kind of what goes on in some of them places. And, you know, their family never comes to see them or anything. And then there's others that their family hovers over them until you wish they would.
Well, we can talk about this for a while, but let's go on, just because it's so specific, and I would say even highly practical. Once again, we're still talking about the pursuit of godliness and all these things. It's very interesting. We have a little bit of a sideline to talk about how the family of God cares for one another, how the families within the family of God care for each other. And now we're back to specifically addressing the widow and this very interesting practical way the Ephesian church, where Timothy is, has thought about addressing the difficulty of addressing widows' needs. Miss Lesta, would you mind reading verse 9 and 10 for us?
A widow is to be put on the list, and in parentheses it says to receive regular assistance, only if she's over 60 years of age, having been the wife of one man, and has a reputation for good deeds. She is eligible if she has brought up children, if she has shown hospitality to strangers, if she has washed the feet of the saints, if she has assisted the distressed, and has devoted herself to doing good in every way.
Yeah, and I'm going to read verse 11. But refuse to enroll younger widows, for when they are drawn away from Christ by desire, this was the word I was going to come back to later or earlier when we talked about the difference between purity and sexual purity. This word here, desire. They want to marry and therefore receive condemnation because they have renounced their original pledge. At the same time, they also learn to be idle, going from house to house. They are not only idle, but are also gossips and busybodies, saying things they shouldn't say. Therefore, I'm in verse 14. Therefore, I want younger women to marry, have children, manage their household, and give the adversary no opportunity to accuse us. We'll come back and finish this passage in a second. The first part has a lot to it. That seems very challenging. And then I think Paul helpfully distills what he's trying to get across when he says about the younger women who are trying to get this assistance possibly too early, too soon. But before that, the practical part of this, there's a list. There's a list of women for the Ephesian church, and you have to enroll into it. There's an application process, apparently. I love this just as a part of church history, to say there were committees or something like that. Someone had to figure out who needs help, all right, come and talk to me. There's an interview process. Or the Ephesian church is a very large and prominent city. And for there to be Timothy, Paul's direct protege here, after they already had a fleet of elders who knew Paul and got to know him, and you know the Ephesian church, they're commended by Jesus directly in Revelation. This is a big church. There's lots going on here, to the point that they need a list. Well, I need to keep track of all these widows who are receiving help. it's just one aspect of this very dynamic church, but very practical. There's a list. And some of these qualifications here, they may seem obvious, but once again, they're practical. It's common sense in a way to say she's at least 60 years old. What an interesting idea. I've never been 60 years old before, so help me out. Is this an okay number? Is this biblically directive to say you don't get help as a widow unless you're 60?
I don't think you can do it that way. It depends on a lot of other things.
Yeah, of course.
And I can give you an example of this same kind of thing you're talking about that's going on right now in our community.
Yeah.
Because they have their hands in every food pantry in the county of Morgan. And when people come to that food pantry and ask for food, they get it, but not until after they've been grilled good.
Yeah.
They don't just walk in there and they say, "Here you go." They want to know what you're getting, how much you got last week, and all that kind of stuff. And what you're doing with it. To make sure you haven't gone to another church.
Yep.
And done the same thing, and then gone out here and said that there are instances of people getting food from food pantries and taking it back to the store and trying to cash it in on it and get money.
Wow. And that's new to me.
So it's part of it is the person. And what their situation is, if they're young enough and physically fit enough to be able to, that's why I say you can't really go by age. If they're capable of taking care of themselves, then they ought to. And they shouldn't be taking away from those who are not capable by trying to say, "Take care of me too."
Yeah, Miss Ann.
That's interesting because as a widow, you can't draw Social Security off your husband until you're 60.
Oh.
Because I wasn't 60 when Herb died, and I couldn't draw Social Security as a widow.
Really?
See, all I had, was I had my work, of course, thank goodness I was working, and then I had my pension that, praise the Lord, when he retired, he took an early retirement, and he had two boxes he could check. One was the payout, which some people do, but some have enough foresight to mark the one that your widow or your spouse gets a percentage, and of course, it's not very much, but it pays my utilities and stuff, and I'm so blessed to have it. It just supplements, and makes, everything much better, but something else I was gonna say, now I've lost it. You was talking about taking things back. We had, years ago when I first worked at Walmart, when people brought clothing back, returns, we donated them to a shelter in Plainfield. I don't remember the name of it, of course that was done through the back office, through the claims department. And people would bring those things back. Mm-hmm. So we had to then, and I've worked in it when, you know, when it was overflowing and you know, everybody, you know, had to, whatever, if they had time. And so that's when we had to start marking through the barcode with a permanent marker, you yeah. know, so that they would know
that it was a donated item.
That it was a donated item and that it couldn't be brought back. But yeah, people would bring back stuff. I never will forget when they weren't open 24 hours. You know, when I first started working there, and I always went to Sunday school, and then they opened at, I think it was 12:30. But anyway, then I'd go to Sunday school, and then I'd go to work, and I was working out in ladies' wear. And so I had to sweep the carpet every Sunday morning. That was my job, to sweep the carpet. And I'd get there about 11:30, and that'd give me an hour to, you know, sweep the carpet and pick up and stuff. And this was then, of course, after the store opened, we had this one co-manager, and I mean, he was a no-nonsense guy, you know. I mean, he didn't put up with a whole lot of stuff. And this lady brought back this swimsuit, and of course, you know, you're not allowed to take swimsuits back if that, I don't even know if they do the same thing because I don't buy anything like that, but if that paper is peeled off of the underneath stuff, yeah, you know, yeah. And she had it wadded up in like a plastic bag, whatever. And he took it and he sniffed it. I never will forget this. The day that I died, he said, "You didn't buy that like this." And he wouldn't take it back. And of course, we were told, you know, I mean, that was the policy at Walmart. You took anything back, even if it had a Target label on it, which I had to do that. And I knew it was a Target label because, you know, it was their label. But we were always told, you know, that made good customer relationships, and if you sure. took it back, yeah. then they would buy something, you know, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. And I never will forget that.
Well, let me return to this weird rule that's super specific. 60 years old, that's your day. If you're 59, not a chance.
I know, see, I've lived that.
Well, I want to press in on this and say it's in the Bible. So isn't this a abiding? Well, is it a abiding to today? That's what I'm getting at.
I don't know, but I have no idea why Social Security, you know, picked 60.
Yeah.
That's the way it is. If you're 59 and a half, forget it. It don't work.
It sounds right to me.
All right, so there's a fun discussion. This is a little bit of church history for you with the Reformers, which is super fun because we're talking 500 years ago. Martin Luther, John Calvin. There's a Swedish fella named Ulrich Zwingli, who's the reason why we take the Lord's Supper the way we do. He also led an army of 300 peasants and wielded an axe against an army and got slaughtered. But another part of lots of fun in church history. Anyway, the discussion between Martin Luther and John Calvin was about music, because the Bible has no instructions about music. And Martin Luther was a musician, and John Calvin was very fond of music. But Martin Luther came to the conclusion that music is okay. Music's fine. You can use it in church. And then John Calvin said, singing is okay, no instruments. Because there's nothing in the New Testament that says you should use instruments. The only instruments in the New Testament are the trumpets in Revelation. You know, so that was their biblical reasoning to say we should or shouldn't have music in church services, was their understanding of the Bible If it's not included in the Bible, if it doesn't say it directly, do this, or vice versa, don't do that, then it's a hard and fast rule. If you want the fancy word for it, it's called the regulative principle. So it's regulating what we can and can't do in church. So Martin Luther is a little bit, you can call him liberal. There you go. Martin Luther, a little bit of a liberal. I got that on recording. But that's essentially what we're talking about here is, where does this fall? Is this a hard and fast rule, or is this a highly specific situation in the mega church of Ephesus? That's really what it comes down to. I'm not going to land on one particular way today, but to say, if you do have any qualms with this specific instruction, we could call this Christian liberty, right? You do not have to agree on these specific requirements for receiving and being on this widow's list. What you do have to agree on, though, are these good works, which is very, once again, practical. No one should ever say that godliness is an impractical and out there mystic thing. It's not. Here's some godliness expected of widows in their life. They have brought up children, shown hospitality, you know, greeted strangers, or maybe just cared for somebody who needed lunch that day, washed the saints' feet. I'm going to be very clear. This is not about washing people's feet. This is about serving people. Helped the afflicted. That's pretty straightforward. That has to do with justice. And devoted herself to every good work. There you go. Any thoughts about this particular list? Just because it is so specific.
I don't know that. I still say there's a whole lot of other factors that go into determining something like this.
Yeah.
Whether you're 60 or whether you've raised kids or whether.
All right, and that's how I want to set this up, and how Paul, I think, intends it, is here's the positive side. Let me show you the negative side. If I didn't make this point clear, what I'm trying to make sure doesn't happen by being almost high caliber, because these are big, big requirements on someone's life to say, have you ever cared for the afflicted? Well, no, I live in an affluent city. Everyone does pretty well. Here's the average income. Everyone makes six figures. No one's really in physical need. I wouldn't ever want somebody to feel like one of these is the linchpin for whether or not their church can support them. But what Paul's doing is giving the positive first and then sets up the younger. Verse 11, but refuse to enroll younger widows. And this word desire, drawn away from Christ by desire. Is there another translation out there? Drawn away by...
disregard of Christ. They wish to marry again.
I don't
know how that's a disregard of Christ.
Yeah. Well, and that's the conversation, right?
Well, if you go back down the comments for 5:9, it says, many believe the list referred to here was a list of widows whom the church was to assist. Some have maintained that this was an official order of widows. These women were to pray for the church and practice works of charity. Verses 5 and 10.
It's a more Catholic understanding.
So if you go by this, it kind of more makes sense that if these widows that were over 60, but what if they want to get married again?
Yeah, well, and it's a kind of a direct statement towards the younger widows to say, if you want to get married again, chances are it's for a different reason. And so maybe it's a little bit of a questioning of the heart, more so than it is if you're getting married at a young age, after your husband's passed, clearly, the way this reads at the end of verse 12, they've renounced their original pledge, talking about their wedding vows, right?
I don't know. If you go back to what this says about praying for the church, like to be on this list, they were to pray for the church and do works, whatever. And then if they got married, they wouldn't be in this order anymore. So
Right.
Maybe that's the vow they're talking about.
Right. So that is actually the right, that is where I land on it, is it's almost as if this was a, hey, now that I'm a widow, I'm committing myself to Christ and Him alone. Paul has a similar instruction to people who are single, saying, if you're fine being single, do not feel an obligation on your life to become married. But if you have this desire within you, but now it says, if these people who have been widows and in their widowhood have made some kind of pledge. I think this was really where the idea of nuns comes from, and monks is not an idea of celibacy and to say, I don't need no man or I don't need no woman. I need Jesus. I don't think it was that. I think it was this order of widows. So I think that is exactly what we're talking about, to say that there are these people who made commitments to say, in my heart and in my flesh, I feel no desire or no need for a spouse. And so I'm going to commit myself to the work of Christ. And so whether that was a formal thing or maybe it was part of the requirements for being on this list, I don't think so. But Paul seems to be addressing some additional pledge that's taking place. This is a very, very debated historical piece when it comes to just what exactly this is referring to. But essentially, this is not. I want to be very clear. This is not referring to wedding vows. I might have been a little bit confusing how I said that before because I'm sarcastic. Sorry about that. I'll work on it.
Well, it can't be marriage vows because
that's
not in disregard of Christ. God is the one that set up marriage.
Yeah.
So it can't be that. So it has to be something else.
Right.
And it says the younger widows, if they were going to be considered to be on this list, they couldn't have had any kids, right? Because they had to be a widow, which meant you didn't have any kids or family.
Mm.
So if that woman wants kids, she's going to have to get married again.
But my question is, the young widows that say their husbands got killed and they had kids, you know, were they not allowed to help them even though they probably...
Yeah, the kids were too young to... take care of their mom.
Yeah. All right, 7-year-old, get out there. Yeah. Care for your mom. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. You know, so what did they do with those people? Because, you know, as a lot of those people lost their spouses. I mean,
this whole thing sounds to me like hierarchy.
Yeah.
Right.
In the church, that this gives individuals the right to lord it over other people and tell them whether they can do this or whether they can do that. They're Pharisees.
I agree with you, Jim.
So when you start setting these things up, then that's exactly what happens. You have these individuals who say, well, you don't qualify for this because you don't have kids, or if you have kids, they're not doing enough for you, so you don't qualify for any of these things.
See, that's the same way it is today. You have all these programs, but you have all these qualifications, you know, and you, well, it's just like I'm dealing with this therapy thing on my leg. I wanted to go to see a podiatrist, and I was told that because I have this lymphedema, I qualify, but then his office respondent said, no, you don't qualify. If you don't have diabetes, and only those people qualify under certain circumstances.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've got to be under... you have all these, well, I know you deal with the same thing, Nate, with
yeah.
men, you know.
It's a lot of fun.
In the hierarchy of government of our nation, there is a person in each township designated as a township trustee, and it is their job to administer aid to people who qualify for it.
Yeah.
And I happen to know one of these people in Morgan County. I'm not going to name any names. But they delight in trying to prove that someone who has applied for something should not get it. They just love to spy on people and say,
"Aha,
I caught you. Now you don't get to have this stuff."
Yeah. So, to say the least, the church should not work this way. And so the way that we're reading this is very, very tempting to make it hard and fast. These are the rules, you see. Sorry, Muggs and Malone came out there. The way this is meant to be applied is saying, here's an extreme, and then here's this wonderful extreme over here. This widow who is doing all of these wonderful things. What a wonderful outcome to have. If we are going to be insisting on caring for every single woman who has lost their husband, we will eventually have these kind of results, though. And so what Paul's doing here is trying to create two separate ways of presenting the same truth. Not to say, these are the rules, you see. We must abide by these very strictly. He's presenting examples so that hopefully what happens within the church, as Timothy has to now present this before the church, guys, we just got this letter from Paul. These aren't rules. This is an example for us to follow. This is something for us to strive for. To put it back in the context of 1 Timothy 4, this is us pursuing godliness together. That's going to be difficult, and it's going to be complicated. It's messy, but we're not going to be the government. We're not going to do this bureaucratically. We are going to say our goal is godliness. And so that means we're going to care for each other. Families, priority number one, your bloodline. They brought you into this world, and God can take you out of it. All right? Don't be scared of your mom and dad being mad at you. Be scared of God being mad at you. You know? That seems to be more the trajectory for all these things. So I want to be very careful to say, yes, these are very helpful examples, but they're extreme examples, especially when you're talking about Paul. The fella likes to dialogue. Specifically, he has this argumentative rhetoric that he's employing here. He's using the means of, I'm going to keep using the word extreme so I don't get too grammatical, but he's using these to help us understand what's the main point. The main point is, yes, we care for each other, but also we're not going to take advantage of each other because the exact same reason. We're family. Honor each other. Be pure in your mindset towards one another, brothers, sisters, fathers, mothers. So if you're not related to somebody, you still should treat them this way. So here's the allowance for caring for widows, but also the clarification, this first falls on the family. And he finally does come back to this idea in verse 15 and 16. In verse 13, we get this list of what could happen, right? They'll learn to be idle, right? You'll stop being productive in any sense of the word. And they're not only idle, you know, not contributing to anything, but they start becoming gossips and busybodies, saying things they shouldn't say. I have a little comment here on mine, but I wanted to make sure. The end of verse 13, does someone else have something besides saying things they shouldn't say?
Just speaking things they ought not to.
Okay, very, very straightforward. Verse 14, therefore, here's the main point. I want younger women to marry, have children, manage their households, and give the adversary no opportunity to accuse us. So if there is any doubt, Paul is not wanting to prevent these widows who have made this pledge not to marry, but rather for the pledge to be sincere. Don't pledge you're going to not get married and then go back on your word, right? If you mean it, great, fantastic. But you're not in this for the support you get. You're not enrolling in some help list and are willing to do whatever it takes to get to get this support, this food or housing or whatever it is. That's not the point, right? So I want to make sure and make emphatically clear, therefore, I want younger women to marry, have children, manage their household, give the adversary no opportunity to accuse us. Gotta love that here, verse 14, in the middle, manage their households, another elder qualification. Manage your household. Falls on moms, falls on dads. Anyway, verse 15 and 16, for some have already turned away to follow Satan. Once again, extreme example, trying to make sure we are not going to allow this end result to happen. If any believing woman has widows in her family, let her help them. Let the church not be burdened so that it can help widows in genuine need. There you go. Church is messy. It's complicated. It takes a lot of clarity, too, to make sure that I'm not stepping on your toes. No, I let me be clear. Let me be pure with my words here and indicate what I really am trying to get across. There's no hidden meaning. I care for you. Is there any way else that you can be cared for? I want to make sure. Are you being cared for? Great. Let's pursue that. Let me help you connect with this the other family members who can help you. You can't? Okay. The church will step in, undeniably. We will help. Complicated. Messy. Hard to get across in six chapters or less. Yeah. All right. Any other thoughts about any of this before we wrap up for the day? We'll talk about elders next week. And I do mean pastors. Okay. Well, let's go ahead and we'll close in prayer. Father, we love you and we thank you for the way that you have shown your heart for us. And it's meant to be evident in your church where there's a responsibility to care for each other. And you've provided a means for it to happen. It is built into the very DNA of the church that we care for each other. Christ's blood has been applied to us, and that makes us family when we care for each other the way families do. And I pray that we would be faithful to do so, to be discerning, yes, but to make our heart be the first thing on the line, to know that we love each other with the very love that you first showed us. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.